are listening to the Elephant in the Room podcast with your host, Sutta Singh. Each week, we will bring you a diverse range of inspiring speakers on issues of inequality and inequity. You will hear stories about fairness, justice, belonging, and about best practice for creating a more inclusive workplace. So, if you are an individual or leader interested in a fairer, equitable, compassionate society and workplace, this podcast is for you.
In this episode of the Elephant in the Room podcast, my guest is Serena Abbasi. She's a trustee for the charity Sour Lemons and sits on the advisory board for the social enterprise The Other Box. Serena was also one of the few diversity and inclusion experts advising the UK Advertising and Media Industry Diversity Task Force and the IPA's Leadership Talent Group. Up until recently, Serena was the worldwide head of culture and inclusion at MNC Saatchi Group. Hi, Serena. Lovely to have you here today. Tell us something about your background.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a real pleasure to be with you this morning. So what can I share with you? So my father is Persian Iranian and came to the UK just before the Iranian Revolution of 1979. So my dad's an immigrant and my mother is British Jamaican and my great granddad came from Jamaica and then brought over my dad a few years later. So Jamaican as well as Persian Iranian, and I very much identify as both as well as British. I was born in London. Educationally, I lived part of my childhood or teenagehood in the countryside, other parts in London. Moved to Iran when I was 18 for 8 months. So lived in Tehran. And I have lived in a few different parts of the world, from the Netherlands, Spain, and America as well. I love to travel.
How do you define your identity? Are you a Londoner first, or are you different people at different times?
Actually, I think I'm quite the opposite. I'm all of my identities at the same time. Yeah, I think naturally when I'm with my Iranian family, for instance, it pulls out my Persianness perhaps even more versus when I'm perhaps with my Jamaican family, then it might pull out my Jamaicanness more. But I embody all of my identities at the same time. I don't try to suppress any of them. I don't try to assimilate. Just a real celebration of all of them. I love talking about my identity. I can't really put a label on it. I don't have a label. I'm just me.
So you're clearly very comfortable with who you are and where you come from.
Yeah, I am. I'm very comfortable with who I am. I don't allow others to define who I am, because I think if you do that, that's when you start going down a really slippery route. And that's where, say, imposter syndrome, I believe, kind of originates as well, by allowing other people to define who you ought to be and what you should be doing. So yeah, I've got a very strong sense of self. My parents are to thank for that.
That's incredible. What is the elephant in the room for you?
I suppose the elephant in the room for me is when I'm with clients and trying to get them to acknowledge that we don't live within a meritocracy. So for me, like, it's so obvious, we clearly don't live in a meritocracy. Many people really struggle with that as a concept. And I suppose that's my elephant in the room. I think we can all acknowledge that some people need to work harder than others. Therefore, that in itself proves that we don't live in a meritocracy if there are some that need to work harder than others. But I think also, without getting too political, I believe that there's something inherently capitalistic about the notion that we do live in a meritocracy. And I think that's why so many people really struggle to kind of think that we don't live in a meritocracy. So it's a lot to unpack. But one of the things that I always stress is not for one second am I trying to negate the fact that you've worked incredibly hard to get to where you've got to, as I would be incredibly offended if anyone were to say that to me, that I hadn't worked hard. It's merely to show that some people have to work harder.
That's so true. I think that consciousness is very, very important. Why do you think there is a lack of diversity in the creative industry? I mean, there is a lack of diversity across, but particularly in the creative industries.
Yeah, I would say most industries obviously built on nepotism. And I think with the creative industry, dependent where you are, if we were to say just model it on, say, a typical creative agency, an advertising agency, so much of it is down to relationships. It's not just skills based. And I think that's probably the reason why there's a lack of diversity, because how are relationships forged? Relationships are forged through commonalities more often, but our commonalities can be gendered, they can be racialized, they can be class based. So I think, therefore, it produces a homogenous culture within a business.
Is there something that the people in the industry can do in order to be more inclusive? Homophily is something that all of us suffer from. So what are the things that you think the brands or the industry can do in order to be more inclusive?
So I really think it just starts with your social network. And I'm a strong believer that the way that we're socialized in our personal life will have a knock-on effect in the way that we're socialized within our business. So, for instance, I have within my most inner trusted circle women that are my friends. I have people from the trans community that are my friends. It's very, very likely that if I were interviewing someone in my business who was a woman, who was trans, I would perhaps feel more comfortable being with them, hiring them, because I have that representation in my personal life. So I'm a strong believer, actually, a lot of this work starts with just broadening people's social networks and making people socialize, bring different types of people together. I think that's where it starts, actually.
How do you do that? Is this when you're younger? Is this when you're in college? Is this when you're in school? How would that actually work?
Well, yeah, the earlier you start, the better. Though also I acknowledge that it's not always possible because not everyone lives in a multicultural city. So if we were to just relay it to being in an organisation, say in London, it would be perhaps taking part in a mentorship scheme where you were mentoring people externally. But any opportunity to socialise with other people will have a positive impact in the way that you then choose to hire.
A lot of people view the role of the chief diversity officer as a tick box. Who's actually responsible for diversity and inclusion in an organization?
So yeah, it should be the CEO. I think it's completely unrealistic for businesses to bring in an individual. And even if that individual were given resources to create a team, it still should not sit with an individual, so a handful of people, to make an organisation more diverse and inclusive and equitable. Every single individual in that business needs to take some level of accountability and responsibility, in my view.
Your view is, I think, a considered view. You have some experience there. What, according to you, is the overlap between organisational purpose, inclusion, and external perception?
What's the responsibility of a brand? So I think brands have such a huge responsibility. They also have so much power. I think where so many governments globally, so not just pointing to one, but so many governments globally fall short, brands have the opportunity to be almost the moral compass for people. You know, they're in people's homes. Brand equity is huge. And I really do believe that brands are missing a trick if they don't start becoming less impartial. I just don't think this is a time for impartiality. I think particularly younger generations, but, you know, I speak to people that are in their late teens, early 20s, and they're really wanting to know who people are. They're really wanting to know who brands are. So I think in order for brands to future-proof themselves, it's important for them to do so, for them to really kind of acknowledge their social responsibility. But in addition to that, I just think there's clearly a moral imperative here as well, not just a business one.
These conversations around racism, lack of diversity, inclusion have been around for decades now, actually. And we've seen some progress on the gender part of it, though not as much as should have been there. You know, COVID-19 and BLM has just sort of accelerated and brought to the fore some more conversations. Do you think there's actually going to be some action or there's going to be change?
Going back to capitalism, because obviously all of this sits within a capitalist framework when we're talking about brands, I think we're moving into a more conscious phase, whether it be the sustainability conversation, whether it be the amplification of the Black Lives Matter movement that happened directly after the murder of George Floyd or as a result of George Floyd's murder. So I think there will be change, though going back to the question that you asked me regarding whose responsibility is it within an organisation to enact change and make a business more diverse and inclusive and equitable. It's the exact same thing for our world, you know? Yeah. A business is just a microcosm. So the answer I would give is, in order for us to see long-lasting change, it's every single person on this planet's responsibility to educate themselves, to check themselves. It's not just down to brands and our governments. Obviously, historically, particularly our governments, we've looked towards them for our moral compass, though there's enough knowledge out there for all of us to be educated, particularly in the West. And if you're somewhat in a comfortable financial situation, particularly those individuals, providing everyone acknowledges their own personal power, keeps themselves accountable, there's no reason why we won't see a huge transformation in our world.
That's a really good way of encapsulating it. In your writings, you say that our liberations are tied to each other. What does that mean?
I am a strong believer that most of us are disenfranchised by the heteropatriarchy that we live in, heterocisgendered patriarchy that we live in. And I just think even those who are white, cisgendered, man, able-bodied, even they are fighting something in some way. And I think the beauty of this work is to really see how others might be fighting something. Even those that, you know, statistically, on paper, should have it all. I believe that we're all fighting something, whether it be toxic family dynamics, sibling dynamics. You could be a carer for your parents, but still be of all those characteristics. Or whether it just be the confinement of masculinity. I do believe that we're all fighting something. And I think this work really calls upon everyone to be empathetic, to really tap into their empathy for all people.
So you combine the commonalities, look at the commonalities and take the fight, the good fight forward.
Exactly. There are commonalities. And even though someone else's oppression might be different to, say, mine or yours, I do believe that we're all fighting something in our own way, or the vast majority of us.
That's true. What role do organizations like Otherbox, Pitchit, The Girlhood play in promoting inclusion in the industry?
Well, the Otherbox are phenomenal, but I'm slightly biased because I sit on their advisory board. And yeah, their founders are dear friends of mine. So yeah, the Otherbox are just brilliant. They have really kind of almost encapsulated this inclusivity, inclusion movement, the more recent movement, you know, as you rightly pointed out. Conversations around diversity, inclusion and equity and equality have been going on for a really long time. But yeah, I've got a lot of time for them. And I think what I really love about the Otherbox is the community that they've created, where it's a safe space for so many people that feel hugely underrepresented within their business, for instance. It's a place for them to, or for us, to seek comfort. So huge to answer your question.
Name three people who inspire you.
Three people that inspire me. I would probably say, good question. Who really inspires me? Because in some ways, it would be easy to name someone that's well-known, famous. Because I don't know them. I don't actually know who they are.
Yeah.
Like, are they good people? You know, you just have this version of them that you see in newspapers or on the screen. But I suppose it would be friends of mine, mothers. I've learned so much about being a mother through my dear friends that have recently had children. And I just have a whole new appreciation for not just mothers, also fathers, particularly mothers, as you know, just carrying a child and the discomfort and not getting a good night's sleep because you've got this human inside your stomach, your womb. So yeah, mothers, I know that's just I'm not really answering your question.
It's great. Mothers do inspire all of us. My mother has been a great inspiration to me. And what is on your reading list?
So I'm obsessed with inherited trauma and also how trauma stays in the body. So I'm reading a few books on trauma, but one in particular is by, I'm going to read his name because I don't want to say it wrong, is a Dutch author. And his name is Basil van der Klok. And it's The Body Keeps the Score. And it just talks about how trauma stays in the body. But I'm obsessed with trauma. There's some wonderful other scholars that talk a lot about trauma. There's Dr. Joy Deguri that talks a lot about inherited trauma. Her work's phenomenal. She is an American scholar. And then there's also another American scholar. Her name is Dr. Rachel Yehuda. And she speaks a lot about inherited trauma via the lens of those who descend from Holocaust survivors.
Awesome. Thank you very much for this.
You're more than welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us this week on the Elephant in the Room podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on any of your favorite platforms, iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts. And if you enjoyed listening to the podcast today, don't forget to write a review and tell your friends. Sign up on the link in the show notes to receive updates on our guest speakers, blogs, and events. And don't forget to tune in every Thursday for new episodes.